Teaching on Telepathy, Chapter 1, The Field of Telepathic Interplay. One of the characteristics distinguishing the group of world servers and knowers is that the outer organization which holds them integrated is practically non-existent. They are held together by an inner structure of thought and by a telepathic medium of interrelation. The great ones, whom we all seek to serve, are thus linked, and can, at the slightest need and with the least expenditure of force, get en rapport with each other. They are all tuned to a particular vibration. In the new groups are collected together people who are very diverse in their nature, who are found upon differing rays, who are of different nationalities, and who are, each of them, the product of widely varying environments and heredity. Besides these obvious factors which immediately attract attention, there is also to be found an equal diversity in the life experience of the souls concerned. The complexity of the problem is also tremendously increased when one remembers the long road which each has traveled, and the many factors, emerging out of a dim and distant past, which have contributed to make each person what he now is. When, therefore, one dwells on the barriers and difficulties supervening upon such diverse conditions, the question arises at once, what provides the common meeting ground, and what makes it possible to have an interplay between the minds involved? The answer to this question is of paramount importance and necessitates a clear understanding. When the biblical words are used, quote, "In him we live and move and have our being," close quote, we have the statement of a fundamental law in nature and the enunciated basis of the fact which we cover by the rather meaningless word omnipresence. Omnipresence has its basis in the substance of the universe and in what the scientists call the ether. This word ether is a generic term covering the ocean of energies which are all interrelated and which constitute that one synthetic energy body of our planet. In approaching, therefore, the subject of telepathy, it must be carefully borne in mind that the etheric body of every form in nature is an integral part of the substantial form of God himself, not the dense physical form, but what the esotericists regard as the form-making substance. We use the word God to signify the expression of the one life which animates every form on the outer objective plane. The etheric, or energy body, therefore, of every human being is an integral part of the etheric body of the planet itself, and consequently of the solar system. Through this medium, every human being is basically related to every other expression of the divine life, minute or great. The function of the etheric body is to receive energy impulses and to be swept into activity by these impulses, or streams of force, emanating from some originating source or other. The etheric body is, in reality, naught but energy. It is composed of myriads of threads of force or tiny streams of energy, held in relation to the emotional and mental bodies and to the soul by their coordinating effect. These streams of energy, in their turn, have an effect on the physical body, and swing it into activity of some kind or another according to the nature and power of whatever type of energy may be dominating the etheric body at any particular time. Through the etheric body, therefore, circulates energy emanating from some mind. With humanity in the mass, response is made unconsciously to the rulings of the universal mind. This is complicated in our time and age by a growing responsiveness to the mass ideas, called sometimes public opinion, of the rapidly evolving human mentality. Within the human family are also found those who respond to that inner group of thinkers who, working in mental matter, control from the subjective side of life the emergence of the great plan and the manifestation of divine purpose. This group of thinkers falls into seven main divisions and is presided over by three great lives or superconscious entities. These three are the Manu, the Christ, and the Mahachohan. These three work primarily through the method of influencing the minds of the adepts and the initiates. These latter, in their turn, influence the disciples of the world, and these disciples, each in his own place and on his own responsibility, work out their concept of the plan and seek to give expression to it as far as possible. It is, therefore, as you can surmise, a process of stepping down rates of vibration until they are sufficiently heavy to affect physical plane matter and thus make possible the building of organized effects on the physical plane. These disciples have hitherto worked very much alone, except when karmic relationships have revealed them to each other, and telepathic intercommunication has been fundamentally confined to the hierarchy of adepts and initiates, both in and out of incarnation, and to their individual work with their disciples. It is, however, now deemed possible to establish a resembling condition and a telepathic relation between disciples on the physical plane. No matter where they may find themselves, this group of mystics and knowers will eventually find it feasible to communicate with one another, and frequently do even now. A basic mystical idea, or some new revelation of truth, is suddenly recognized by many and finds expression simultaneously through the medium of many minds. No one person can claim individual right to the enunciated principle or truth. Several minds have registered it. It is usually stated, however, in a wide generalization, that these people have tapped the inner thought currents, or have responded to the play of the universal mind. Literally and technically, this is not so. The universal mind is tapped by some member of the planetary hierarchy according to his mental bias and equipment, and the immediate needs sensed by the working adepts. He then presents the new idea, new discovery, or the new revelation to the group of adepts, telepathically, of course, my brother, and when it has been discussed by them, he later presents it to his group of disciples. Among them, he will find one who responds more readily and intelligently than the others, and this one, through his clear thinking and the power of his formulated thought forms, can then influence other minds. These others grasp the concept as theirs. They seize upon it and work it out into manifestation. Each regards it as his special privilege so to do, and because of this specializing faculty and his automatically engendered responsibility, he throws back of it all the energy which is his, and works and fights for his thought forms. An illustration of this is to be found in the history of the League of Nations. Before he took up special work, the Master Serapis sought to bring through some constructive idea for the helping of humanity. He conceived of a world unity in the realm of politics, which would work out as an intelligent banding of the nations for the preservation of international peace. He presented it to the adepts in conclave, and it was felt that something could be done. The Master Jesus undertook to present it to his group of disciples as he was working in the Occident. One of these disciples on the inner planes seized upon the suggestion and passed it on, or rather stepped it down, until it registered in the brain of Colonel House. He, not recording the source, of which he was totally unaware, passed it on in turn to that sixth-ray aspirant called Woodrow Wilson. Then, fed by the wealth of analogous ideas in the minds of many, it was presented to the world. It should be borne in mind that the function of a disciple is to focus a stream of energy of some special kind upon the physical plane, where it can become an attractive center of force and draw to itself similar types of ideas and thought currents which are not strong enough to live by themselves or to make a sufficiently strong impact upon the human consciousness. In union is strength. This is the second law governing telepathic communication. The first law is, 1. The power to communicate is to be found in the very nature of substance itself. It lies potentially within the ether, and the significance of telepathy is to be found in the word omnipresence. The second law is, 2. The interplay of many minds produces a unity of thought, which is powerful enough to be recognized by the brain. Here we have a law governing a subjective activity and another law governing objective manifestation. Let us voice these laws in the simplest manner possible. When each member of the group can function in his mind consciousness, untrammeled by the brain or the emotional nature, he will discover the universality of the mental principle, which is the first exoteric expression of the soul consciousness. He will then enter into the world of ideas, becoming aware of them through the sensitive receiving plate of the mind. He then seeks to find those who respond to the same type of ideas and who react to the same mental impulse simultaneously with himself. Uniting himself to them, he discovers himself to be en rapport with them. The understanding of the first law produces results in the mind or mental body. The understanding of the second law produces results in a lesser receiving station, the brain. This is possible through the strengthening of a man's own mental reaction by the mental reaction of others similarly receptive. It will be found, therefore, that this process of communication, governed by these two laws, has always been in operation among the adepts, the initiates, and the senior disciples who are in physical plane bodies. Now the operation of this process is to be extended and steadily developed by the emerging group of mystics and world servers who constitute, in embryo, the world savior. Only those who know something of the meaning of concentration and meditation, and who can hold the mind steady in the light, will be able to understand the first law and comprehend that interplay of thought-directed energies which finds one terminal of expression in the mind of some inspired thinker, and the other terminal in the mind of the attentive world server who seeks to tune in on those mind processes which hold the clue to ultimate world salvation. The thought-directing energy has for its source a thinker who can enter into the divine mind owing to his having transcended human limitation. The thought-directed receiver is the man in exoteric expression who has aligned his brain, his mind, and his soul. It is a fact that omnipresence, which is a law in nature and based on the fact that the etheric bodies of all forms constitute the world etheric body, makes omniscience possible. The etheric body of the planetary logos is swept into activity by his directed will. Energy is the result of his thought form playing in and through his energy body. This thought form embodies and expresses his world purpose. All the subhuman forms of life and the human forms up to the stage of advanced man are governed by divine thought through the medium of their energy bodies, which are an integral part of the whole. They react, however, unconsciously and unintelligently. Advanced humanity, the mystics and the knowers, are becoming increasingly aware of the mind which directs the evolutionary process. When this awareness is cultivated and the individual mind is brought consciously into contact with the mind of God as it expresses itself through the illumined mind of the hierarchy of adepts, we shall have the steady growth of omniscience. This is the whole story of telepathic interplay in the true sense. It portrays the growth of that oligarchy of elect souls who will eventually rule the world, who will be chosen so to rule, and who will be recognized by the mass as eligible for that high office through the coordination that they have established between 1. The universal mind, 2. Their individual mind illumined by the soul consciousness, 3. The brain reacting to the individual mind, and 4. The group of those whose minds and brains are similarly tuned and telepathically related. In connection with disciples and aspirants to discipleship, it is presumed that their minds are somewhat attuned to the soul, that they are also so aligned that the soul, mind, and brain are coordinated and are beginning to function as a unit. This is the individual responsibility. Now comes the task of learning to be responsive to the group and to find and contact those minds which are energized by similar thought currents. This has to be cultivated. How, my brother, shall this be done? Let us consider the various types of telepathic work. The undeveloped human being and the unthinking non-mental man or woman can be and often are telepathic, but the center through which they work is the solar plexus. The line of communication is, therefore, from solar plexus to solar plexus. This is therefore instinctual telepathy and concerns feeling in every case. It involves invariably radiations from the solar plexus, which in the case of the animal world serves usually as the instinctual brain. This type of telepathic communication is definitely a characteristic of the animal body of man, and one of the best illustrations of this telepathic rapport is that existing between a mother and her child. It is this type of telepathy which is predominantly present in the average spiritualistic seance. There the medium, quite unconsciously, sets up a telepathic rapport with the people in the circle. Their feelings, worries, sorrows, and desires become apparent and form part of the reading, so-called. Both the sitters and the medium are functioning through the same center. With this class of medium and in this type of seance, the highly intelligent and mentally polarized man or woman will learn nothing and will probably receive no messages unless faked. Hence, therefore, when it comes to scientific investigation by trained minds, physical phenomena has predominated and not the more subtle forms of psychism. Where the more subtle forms of super or extrasensory perception have been involved, the subjects have been either adolescent or in their early 20s and have been primarily and rightly focused in the emotional feeling body. This is true even when they are highly intellectual. This form of telepathic communication is therefore of two kinds, with the solar plexus always involved. A. It will be from solar plexus to solar plexus between two people who are ordinary, emotional, governed by desire, and primarily centered in the astral and animal bodies. B. It will be between such a solar plexus person, if I may so call him, and a higher type whose solar plexus center is functioning actively, but whose throat center is also alive. This type of person registers in two places, provided that the thought sensed and sent out by the solar plexus person has in it something of mental substance or energy. Pure feeling and entirely emotional emanations between people necessitate only solar plexus contact. Later, when group work and telepathy is undertaken, the centers of transmission, wherein high and consecrated feeling, devotion, aspiration, and love are concerned, and where the groups work with pure love, communication will be from heart to heart, and from a group heart to another group heart. The phrase heart-to-heart talk, so often used, is usually a misnomer at this time, but will some day be true. At present, it is usually a solar plexus conversation. The second form of telepathic work is that of mind to mind, and it is with this form of communication that the highest investigation is at this time concerned. Only mental types are involved, and the more that emotion and feeling and strong desire can be eliminated, the more accurate will be the work accomplished. The strong desire to achieve success in telepathic work and the fear of failure are the surest ways to offset fruitful effort. In all such work as this, an attitude of non-attachment and a spirit of don't care are of real assistance. Experimenters along this line need to give more time and thought to the recognition of types of force. They need to realize that emotion and desire for anything on the part of the receiving agent create streams of emanating energy which rebuff or repulse that which seeks to make contact, such as the directed thought of someone seeking rapport. When these streams are adequately strong, they act like a boomerang and return to the emanating center, being attracted back there by the power of the vibration which sent them forth. In this thought lies hid the cause of A. the failure on the part of the broadcasting or transmitting agent. Intense desire to make a satisfactory impression will attract the outgoing thought back again to the transmitter. B. the failure on the part of the receiving agent, whose own intense desire to be successful sends out such a stream of outgoing energy that the stream of incoming energy is met, blocked, and driven back whence it came. Or, if the receiver is aware of this and seeks to stem the tide of his desire, he frequently succeeds in surrounding himself with a wall of inhibited desire through which naught can penetrate.